did you get into the fishing business?
1984.
Okay, and how did you get into the fishing business?
We had bought into a partnership with some friends on a grazing lease, and before we moved here, they had bought a fishing permit, salmon seine permit, and a boat, and so we came into the partnership because that was added to the partnership.
And how much did all that cost just to get started?
I have no idea.
Okay, why did you get into the fishing business?
Because it was in with the grazing lease.
And what's a grazing lease?
The Salter Crow grazing leases for cattle. And the people that moved up here that we were in partners with bought the fishing boat and the salmon seine permit and included it in the partnership.
Okay. Well, how have the profits been since you started? When was it a good year? When was it a bad year?
Well, the first year was a beginning year for all of us, and then we split the partnership. And when we split the partnership, we took the fishing part of it, and they took the grazing leases, the farming part of it. And basically, we haven't had a real good, exceptionally good year. Last year, we had a good year in crab. Before that, with the salmon, because we bought another boat and crab fished it last salmon permit, they were just average years. And of course, 89, nobody fished, so we didn't fish at all in 89.
So when was your best? So this year was your best year because you started crabbing?
92, because we started crabbing.
Okay. What do you think goes into a good season that makes up a good season?
Price.
That's it?
Price and number of fish that come in. You can have a good price and not very many fish, or you can have real low prices and have a lot of fish, but there's no way you're going to make money unless you're diversified. And basically that's what we've done, is we've diversified. So in addition to the salmon seasons, now we tender and we fish crab, black cod, and halibut.
Has tendering been the same over all the years?
Yes, it stayed the same. The prices for tendering have stayed the same. So
how does the tendering make its money?
The boat gets paid so much per day, and then out of that comes and the canneries pay for the fuel, and just fuel, I guess, is what the canneries pay for. The crew buys their own food, but then they sell food to smaller fishing boats. So many times they can recoup some of the cost of their food. And you paid so much per day, and you fish, sign a contract to fish for 2 months or 30 days or however long. And then out of that you pay your skipper and pay your crew and the upkeep and maintenance on the boat.
So what kinds of fishing do you have going?
With one boat we fish halibut and salmon, and the other boat fishes, it tenders, and then it also fishes black cod, halibut, crab.
And that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how did the other guy do with his cattle? Is he doing that here?
Yeah, it's here. He hasn't really done anything with the leases. He does farming, well, somewhat with it as a sideline, but not out at the ranch.
So he has a bunch of cattle up there?
No. Well, there's cattle there, but they're wild. The Salty Cove leases aren't, the ranch there isn't worked like Burton's Ranch out at Kodiak Cattle Company or some of the other ones, or the one that Omar Stratman runs, and those are all cattle leases for the most part too, grazing leases. And the one at Sultry is not accessible year round. You can't get out there. So consequently, he's not working it there's cattle out there, but he doesn't work it like the other two ranches do.
So what kind of cost do you go through every year to keep this going, to keep the fishing going?
Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
For what? I mean, what do you have to pay for just to keep it going?
All of the upkeep, maintenance on the boat. Boats, anything that breaks down has to be replaced. We replaced reduction gear last year to the tune of $14,000, that type of cost. Life rafts have to be replaced every so often, and motors are only good, engines are only good for a certain length of time, and then they need to be replaced or have a major rebuild done. And then just the all the other little stuff that goes with it, you know, lights and the different hydraulic gear can go out, needs to be fixed, all this type of thing. And then if you do any improvements to your boat, for instance, this year we're lengthening the Tammy by 4 feet. So that's a big expense, just to add 4 feet onto the boat, onto the length of the boat.
And that's not going to make its capacity to carry any larger?
No, it makes it more seaworthy because it's a little longer.
Yeah.
But as far as its carrying capacity, no, it doesn't change anything.
So has it really been profitable for you to have the fishing thing going?
Yes, it is. I don't know if we could make, well, I suppose we could make a living off from it. It's really hard to say since we both work full time. The money all goes into one pot. We don't separate it out, so it's really hard to say whether we could make a living off from it or not without another income somewhere, either jobs or retirement or something like
well,
that.
Well, would it be rude of me to ask a ballpark figure on how much you think you make a year from the two boats?
Last year, well, we just did our taxes. And that's with all expenses, and that's with depreciation, and everything else, we made $19,000.
Off the both boats?
The both boats.
And that's just for owning them?
Right, that's our clear profit. That's after we've paid everything, and we've depreciated out what we could depreciate out. So that's all repairs and maintenance, fuel, groceries, bait, wages to the crew. And then whatever we've bought, we paid for it, but it's on a depreciation scale now. So our total income that shows on our income taxes was $19,000. So if we did not have our other incomes to supplement that, we couldn't live on $20,000 a year in Kodiak.
No, not here, so. So how much do you think you have invested altogether in all the boats that you have? Both the boats?
Probably with the boats and the shop and all of the fishing equipment, pots, seines, hooks and everything, we probably have close to $1 million.
Why don't you just take it and chuck it all and take the money and run?
Because we like to do something.
You like to do it?
Sure.
So it's fun and it's profitable?
Yeah, I mean it's putting our money into something.
So you think it's a wise investment?
For us. I don't know if it would be for anybody else, but it is for us. And there's many of them that make their living off the fishing. And that's the only way they do it, is they make their living off the fishing. Because we have other income, we probably are able to invest in more, maybe sooner than what they would be able to. For instance, to buy another boat instead of just upgrading a boat. And then buying land and putting shop on it.
How much?
We're able to do that.
How much percentage do you get out of what's made from each boat?
Okay, we get 55% as the owners of the boat. But out of that 55%, we pay 55% of the bait for halibut fishing and cod fishing. We pay 55% of the fuel for the fisheries, and we pay all the wages, maintenance, everything. So, actually, the wages are the 55 part of the difference,
the 5%.
So we pay, for instance, you fished the boat 1 year, and you got, I don't remember now what your percentage was, 6%?
No, I think it was 9.
9%, whatever. So you have four, for a salmon season, you have four people on the boat. And we get 55%, so there's 45% of the fish ticket, or the income, to split between the crew, the skipper and the crew. The skipper usually gets about 20-25%. That leaves the rest of it to split between the three crew members. The crew pays their percentage of the fuel. For instance, if you got 9% of the fish ticket, you would pay 9% of the fuel cost. Salmon doesn't have a bait cost, but if it was a halibut where there would be a bait cost, they would pay their percentage of the bait cost. And then they buy their own food. We don't pay for their food. So all the food you ate on the boat was divided between the four crew members. So out of our 55%, then we pay for all of the upkeep on the boat, all the maintenance, everything. You don't pay for any of that. The skipper doesn't pay for any of that. We pay for everything.
Do you pay anything on your standing thing that you, so you can sell the fish to the canneries? There's no sale that states that you can.
No, it's a contract or a verbal contract that they'll buy your fish from you.
And that's all
basically.
It is.
Yeah.
I could go out with a rod and reel and catch 100 fish and sell it to them?
No, because you don't have a salmon permit. You couldn't do that.
Oh, you have to have a salmon permit.
You have to have a permit, and you buy that. You buy it from an individual, but they're issued by the state. There's only so many of them, and you have to pay for that permit. So in addition to a salmon, in addition to paying for the boat and all of the gear, then you have to buy the permit to fish it. And so there's the seine permit, which we have one of those. There's a beach seine permit, which we have one of those, which is another different kind of permit. You fish from the beach. You don't fish out in the open water.
Do you do that too?
Our son does that. And then there's the set netters permit. There may be a couple other ones that I'm not aware of. So you have the cost of the permit, which is a cost per piece of paper, basically. It's just something that says that you can fish for salmon. So it's pretty risky to pay for this, because if salmon prices are low, and if you wanted to sell it, there isn't any way you're going to sell it, maybe for what you bought it for. Salmon prices are good, and it looks good for the future, then you stand a chance of selling it and making some money on it. So it's a real risky to buy just that piece of paper. That's all you have to show for it. You don't have a boat. It doesn't come with a boat. It doesn't come with the gear or anything. It's a separate entity.
So that's like buying the permit, like buying stock?
Basically, it is.
Stock in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. And then, what about my train of thought here? Right, what was it you had asked me about when I was answering?
Probably about selling it to the canneries.
Oh, selling it to the canneries, okay. The only real contract you sign with the cannery is if you have a tender. Then you sign a contract, an actual contract with them, that they'll pay you so much a day for so many days to tender. So say if you decided that you wanted to go out and fish halibut commercially, you'd have to purchase a commercial halibut permit. And that you purchase just in the state of Alaska, it isn't a permit that you have to pay a lot of cash for like you do a salmon permit. And you went out in the boat and you caught 100 pounds of halibut. Sure, you could bring them into a cannery and sell them, but you would need to have talked to a cannery first to see if they would buy the fish from you. There's been many times, it has not happened to us, knock on wood, but there have been many times when canneries have been plugged for fish and somebody comes in with a load of fish. They don't have someone in particular they're selling to. They're just whoever's taking fish at the time and will take their fish, that's who they will sell them to. And they come in and nobody will take their fish. And they've got a boatload of fish. So you need to, before you get into anything like this, you need to set it up with a cannery that will buy your fish. And for the most part, that's a verbal agreement. And if they get plugged with fish, they can just as easily tell you no. That's why a lot of times these tenders will tender for one cannery, and then that cannery will buy fish from certain boats. So for instance, when Zachary goes out tendering, there's certain boats that they say are fishing for CIP. And so they'll go to those boats in their area and collect the fish, to buy the fish from those boats. A lot of tenders won't take them from any other boat unless that's a boat that's been designated by CIP as fishing for them. So there's a lot to get into it. It isn't just a matter of going out and buying a boat and the gear and a permit or a license or what have you and running out there and fishing. You need to have some kind of agreement with a cannery or someplace where you can sell those fish.
What if the tender takes it from a boat that is not fishing for the same cannery?
They don't unless they've been told to. They refuse to take it.
Because when I was fishing on the Tamarone, nobody refused to take our fish.
No, because you had tenders from CIP. And there's some of the canneries that they'll tell their tender that they can take them from other boats. If their boats maybe haven't done as well, so they aren't filled up and they can go ahead. So there could be a couple canneries in there that had tenders out that had been told they could take fish from other boats. And that's why Steve was able to sell them to that particular tender.
Yeah, because one tender had a wetback.
Had a
wetback.
Right, yeah. Well, those are easier.
A dry haul back.
Sure.
So you just step in the haul.
Yeah.
Step them out.
Mm-hmm.
So does, what was I going to say? That's a good question.
You should have written down.
I had 5 or 6. She just talked for a long time.
Well, you should interview more than just me, too.
Who else?
Well, I don't know, but you should. I took the same class, and I did the same thing as you're doing, as the verbal interviews. And I interviewed 3 or 4 people. And I planned to even interview more, and then I just didn't get it done. But you don't interview just one for the whole paper. You need to get a number of them. I gave your mom a couple of names the other day. Jack McFarland, who's one of the assembly members, has been in the fishing business in Kodiak since he was a teenager here. So basically that's what you need to do, is just talk to, go down to the docks, find somebody working on their boat.
Okay, how did you get into the fishing business?
A friend.
So, are we going to get to provide that cake up there or what?
Yep. Well...
Huh?
A new adventure.
For a new adventure?
Yep.
Okay. Why did you get into the fishing business? That's the same thing, okay?
Well, I was young. I had to try something new.
How did the profits vary and ever since you started?
Getting better and better.
Well, when did you start?
1974.
And it's always gotten better?
Yeah.
Okay, when was your best year?
88.
88? And why was that?
Well, a lot of reds. Prices were real high.
Okay, what do you think goes into a good season?
What goes into a good season? What do you mean?
What makes it?
A skiff man, a net, boat. You gotta have everything top of the line stuff.
Okay. How long have you been into the fishing industry?
For about 35 years. Started when I was about 7.
How did you get into it?
My father was in it.
And why did you keep doing it after?
Because it's exciting, challenging, and rewarding. And it's very interesting at all times.
How have the profits varied over the past?
profits in the last few years have gone down considerably for us, but years ago they were very good.
What would you say your best year was?
Oh, probably $100,000.
$100,000?
For crew share.
For crew share? So how much is that overall for the whole boat?
Probably close to $1 million.
And what year was that?
Probably 78 or to 80.
78 to 80. What would you say makes a good year?
Good year now for the boat or personally?
For everybody. What's all the factors that go into making it?
Well, it just depends on how many expenses and everything that you have, you know. If you have a small operation, you don't need very large expenses. But I mean, you don't have very large expenses, but on a bigger boat, you have bigger expenses. You need to make more profit.
Like, what expenses are you talking
about? Maintenance of the boat, electronics, keeping updated with the electronics, and, you know, keeping your boat in good shape. Shipyard bills can run into hundreds of thousands of dollars. I don't really know on just how much the maintenance is on boats or what.
What kind of fish do you fish?
I fish for tanner crab, codfish, halibut, and Dungeness crab. Well, we used to fish for king crab in Kodiak, but now there aren't any.
So, are the prices of those, what are the prices at right now?
The prices right now are relatively low compared to what they were. And sometimes Dungeness crab were $1.65 a pound. This year we're looking at 75 cents. Codfish is 22 cents. It has been as high as 30. And halibut last year was 80 cents, and that was up to $2.10 about 4 years ago. So everything seems to be a little cheaper. Now we're going for herring and it's down to maybe $500 or $600 a ton, and I can remember times when they were over $1,200 to $1,600 a ton. So right now it's pretty much a downtime fishing, I would say.
And what do you think the cause of that is?
I think the cause of it is sometimes overproduction, sometimes bad marketing. Quality has a lot to do with it. The Dungeness crab, the reason is last year there was a paralytic shellfish poisoning scare, and people became kind of turned off. They don't want to get poisoned, so they quit eating them. So the price goes down.
So what all does it cost to get started in this?
To get started nowadays, almost everything is either limited entry or interim permits, and some same permits or Bristol Bay permits go up as high as $300,000 just to get started. Just before, that's not even counting a boat. Chicken same permits, you know, you gotta have $300,000 or you can't even think about it.
Hey.
When did you get into the fishing industry?
When I was about 9.
Why did you get into the fishing industry?
Because my parents were involved.
How the prices vary?
Yeah, I really can't remember. No, it doesn't seem like it varied that much.
Getting more for pinks?
Yeah. No market for pinks now, doesn't seem like.
So how much of a... How's it varied since you started, do you think?
Varied? I don't know, it's been up and down, you know. Over the years, the price has gone up and down.
What was your best year?
How much money?
Yeah, money-wise.
12 grand.
12 grand?
For 3 months.
And what year was that?
88.
What do you think goes into a good season? What do you think makes it?
Hard work.
That's it? Doesn't matter what the price is?
Fish. Well, the price is down, he's got to catch more fish.
So it's mostly hard work, huh?
Yeah, the harder you work, the more fish you catch, the more money you make.
I think of some bullshit stuff to say. About the fishing.
About fishing?
Yeah.
No, I like it.
You like it? Would you trade it to do something made more money?
Yeah.
You would?
Yeah, it's not that great. It's not that much fun. But, you know, if I can make more money and stay at home, I would probably. It's nice because you can work all summer and you don't have to work in the winter if you don't want to. Pay all your bills. You can just hang out.
How did you get into the fishing business?
I grew up fishing.
You grew up fishing?
Mm-hmm.
So why did you start, or why did you keep doing it?
It's the only thing. Anything you don't want to see in print. It's the only thing I know right now.
How's the profits been since you started?
Since I said it's gone up and gone down, back up again.
Well, what was your best year?
The best year was last year.
Last year?
Yeah.
And why was that?
There was a lot of fish.
A lot of fish.
Yeah.
Weren't the prices pretty low though?
Yeah.
What do you fish for?
Right now we're fishing herring, and several times I fish for salmon.
So what goes into a good season altogether?
What goes? What do you mean?
What do you have to put in
for a good season?
For a real good season, or what has to be there?
What do you say about
the fish?
Yeah. Fish will have to be there about maybe 150, 200 pounds of fish or more. 1,000 pounds.
1,000 pounds of fish.
200 and some thousand pounds of fish.
They have to be there.
Well, should be
for all the boats or just for this one boat?
For all the boats.
For all the boats.
For this year, yeah. Prices are low.
Well, for this year, I heard there was going to be like a 20 million return.
You don't trust the fishing game.
You don't trust the fishing game?
No, you never trust the fishing game with what they predict.
Why is that? They're always wrong?
Sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. Last year they were wrong. They predicted so many pink salmon last year and really they didn't show up.
So what does it cost to keep fishing?
What does it cost?
What does it cost?
I don't know. I don't run a boat. I'm just a deckhand.
So what do you get?
What do I get? A percentage? I get 10%.
10%?
After groceries, fuel, taxes.
Okay. When did you get into the fishing business?
When did I get into the fishing business? Back in when I was 17.
When was that?
Yeah, I don't know. 26 now.
Probably 13 years ago. 13 years ago?
Yeah.
And why did you get into the fishing business?
Because I like being on the water.
You like being on the water?
Yeah.
So you didn't do it at all for the money?
No, not really. Not at the time when I first started. I like being outdoors.
So how have the profits varied since you started?
Like you said, it varies.
I mean, what were the good years? What were the bad?
Well, 85 and 86 were good years for me. 87 was okay. 88 was mediocre. You know, it just varies what boat you get on.
So what was your best year?
85 and 86.
85 and 86?
Yeah.
So
you're very good boats.
How much does it keep going? I mean, how much does it cost for you to keep doing it?
Me?
Yeah.
Hardly nothing.
Nothing?
No.
And what do you think goes into making it a good season?
What do you mean?
What
what are all the variables that go into making it good for you? Good for me? Being on a good boat, a safe boat, guy who knows experience, good skipper, you know, like Mr. Gilbert here.
Yeah.
Real good guy. And the crew. Crew makes a lot. Maintenance and all that good stuff. Doesn't matter if you think it matters how many fish are out there. Now, you keep grinding, do your 10, 15 sets a day, it always adds up at the end of the season. The other thing varies is the price, you know. The price of fish is what counts the majority of the profits.
That counts too?
Yeah.
Okay, think of some more shit than bullshit.
Shoot, I don't know.
Just anything. Talk about anything that involves with fishing.
Anything that involves with fishing, eh? It's hard to say. You just go out and do what you gotta do, you know? I'm in the skiff, so I got my job, my responsibility. And everybody's just gotta work together. It's gotta click. You know, if you get on a boat where everybody works together and knows what they're doing, everything goes real smooth, you make your money, and you have fun while you're doing it.
There, we can just sit here and talk now.
Yeah,
if I would have that on tape, I could have used that. So, what boat are you going to be on this year?
For what? Out in the Bering?
Anything.
In the wintertime or summertime?
Boat.
So, in the summertime, I'd be on this boat, Susan Marie.
And Susan Marie.
Yeah, and then in the wintertime, I'd probably be going with Ron Tennyson on the Destiny again.
On the Destiny?
Yeah. That's our crab boat.
Have you been on that before?
Yeah, I just fished with them this year.
How'd you do?
Did okay. Not as good as, like I said, last year. I fished in the Four Daughters last year and we kicked ass last year. I'm sorry. We kicked butt last year. Did real good last year. By the way, I peed on a halibut job with the woman.
Halibut job?
Yeah, on the big boat.
The big boat?
Yeah.
I'd probably die, man.
See that blue, that black one with the blue trim right there?
Yeah.
That's the one I went crabbing on. And he needs two guys for halibut.
The D-Don?
No, Destiny. The big boat, way over there.
The 140. Oh, I've seen the Destiny before. It's a big one.
Yeah, the big one.
We're on just for halibut.
Oh, you might even have a crab job too if you want one.
In the Bering?
Fuck that. He's gonna need. I need someone to take my place with blue crab because I'm gonna be still salmon fishing in the fall on here.
Isn't your life in danger when you go on the Bering?
Yeah, but of course your life is always in danger when you're on the water.
Well, when you're saying it, it's not as bad though.
It can be though, because you're in a little boat. I'm in the little guy. I'm in the skiff. I'm the skiff man, this guy.
Yeah, well, but seinen, you're out there and you're in shallower water.
Depends where you fish at. Yeah.
Well, it's only so deep the seine can go, you know?
Oh, like our seine's gone. I think he got a new seine this year, so 3.5 strips. So we can fish like 12, 24, about 70-something like feet. But it doesn't matter how you fish. Fish don't travel deep, they travel shallow. No matter where you're at. If we fish a shellacock and we're going up to the Kukulik Reds, you know, shellacock is the worst stretch of water that's known in the state of Alaska. Yeah. I guess Dan, I've never been on the other boat.
Say that louder.
What?
Shellacock.
Shellacock. What about it? Oh, that's true. Everybody knows about shellacock.
Shellacock's the worst straight in the water?
Yeah.
The worst straight in Alaska?
Yeah, that's what they say. Because it comes up so quick. You know, like on this boat, we fish in 12, maybe 13 foot seas. You know, on the big boat, you fish out in 20 and 30 foot seas. But you know, 100 foot compared to 48 foot, the bigger boat can take a lot more, so you can fish a lot more. This little guy, you can't fish quite as much as those, but.
But isn't the halibut more dangerous because the hooks are flying off and everything?
Yeah, you know, I'm the stack man on the crab boat, or called the monkey, so. It's me and then the crane operator. Our crane operator is a guy I gotta trust my life with. Because basically, being a stack man, I guess would be considered probably the dangerous job on the crab boat.
How much percentage do you get on the crab boat?
On the big boat, you get 6%.
6%? How much do you get more than other people because you're the most
sometimes
dangerous
job? You do. On some crab boats, some guys pay like that. But most of the big boats, you know, you get anywhere between 5-6%. 5-7%. On the other boat I was on last year, I got 7%.
And that's the one that you made all the money on.
You know, like sometimes on the crab boat, you're out there, like, we're out there for 6.5 months straight. And so some guys get kind of tired, so you're allowed to take rotations. And you get 2 weeks off. And then whoever goes, you go with the, they have a 5-man crew, one guy leaves, so you go 4-man crew and you get an extra percent. So there for 2 weeks, you get 7%. And then when he comes, well, you do that for a month. We went with four guys for the whole season just about. So I got basically 7% for all my trips, except for two trips. But you know, like I said, it all varies what the price is, you know. Humpy's selling real good this year for price, so a lot of people make their money on Humpy's this year. It's fun though. Like
so
I said,
you can give me a job on that one. Where would he be going fishing for on
halibut? He's going down there. I can't say. He'd be down
deep water or?
Probably about. It's hard to say. It all depends what the weather be like. And stuff. I think we fished about 55 paddles last year, 48 paddles last year. But he's going way. He's going way down. Way down.
And how much you make on? Did you go halibut with him last year? On halibut.
It was limited entry, so we were allowed 35,000 pounds. We caught that quarter, but the price was good. Now, if you get $1 a pound for your halibut, then I would have made for, we only fished 16 hours, because we already caught a quarter, we had a quarter caught in 16 hours. And I made about $1,200.
$1,200? Pretty sad.
And that's at 6%. But now, this first opening, you're allowed to catch as much as you want.
Yeah.
We didn't set out 22 skates. We set out 22 skates on the board. We had 5,500 hooks. And we would we still had to throw some fish overboard, you know, because we went over our limit.
Yeah.
But he knows how to fish out of it. He does real. I bet you he'll probably end up 50,000-60,000 pounds this year just for that first opening. And if your expenses aren't very high, 6% off the top after expenses, you should go and make a couple grand. But you know, $2,000 in 16 hours, man. There's too many jobs that can do that.
Yeah, I know some guy went out on the Rough and Ready last year fishing halibut. He made $2,000. He was making 3% though.
Yeah, I see. Well, we beat the Rough and Ready.
Last year?
Yeah. But see, on this boat, he get paid 15%. His crew made $4,000 in halibut last year.
They did? The time that I was baiting for?
Second opening.
The second opening?
Yeah.
Oh, when nobody was on there.
It was all different crew, I guess.
I'm good, because I heard they made $500 each that time that I was gear working for them.
Yeah. Well, that first opening you went on.
I didn't go.
You guys. Oh, you didn't go in the first opening?
I didn't go.
I didn't do it.
Gear work.
Oh wow.
I was just gear work for it. I made $1,500.
Yeah, you did better doing the gear work.
I know. Damn right. That's why I want to do gear work, so my life wouldn't be in danger, and it's a solid.
Wow,
guarantee.
We probably look you up again.
You guys need gear work this time?
Yeah, we're gonna need to have to get baited up and stuck our gear. I think he's making 15 new skates. I'm not quite sure.
15 new skates?
But, you know, the deal is, you know, if we don't want to bait, because I hate bait.
I like bait.
Huh?
I like bait.
You don't mind?
I don't like
pollock. I'm gonna hire you, so. You know,
I don't like pollock bait. Is he baiting? Is he doing pollock again this year?
Probably.
Because last year when I did pollock, man, I fucked my hands up.
That's your fault, not our fault.
24 hours doing the same thing over and over again, your hands would die.
But shoot, man, with five guys, tell me, he's got that new gear though.
Huh?
He's got that diaper gear, right?
Yeah, he got the diaper gear now. Everybody there, everybody's hands were hurt.
Oh, wow.
Well, it was like, well, what do we have to do, 13 or 17 each?
Dubs?
Yeah.
Or
at a time, right there. You know, within that 24 hours.
We had 120 skates on the big boat.
Yeah, well, it's a lot more.
Fished 15,000 pounds. That's how many hooks we had, and we didn't. We only put out, we only laid out about 9,500 pounds. Yeah, I'll ask them. I'm pretty sure we're going to need somebody, a couple guys out there to stick gear and at least bait up. You pay, what is it? $20 a tub.
$20 a tub? Last year he's paying $10 an hour.
Or which way? Whatever Danny does it. But I don't know. You paid it up last year, right?
Yeah, I paid it. Yeah.
And he paid you $20 an hour? Or $10 an hour?
$10 an hour. Well, at the beginning I was doing two tubs an hour though too. So if he was paying me $20 an hour, that would be $40 an hour for the first couple hours.
Yeah.
But then towards the end, you know, in the last, you know, 20, you know, after you pass 20 hours.
I think it's better getting paid by the tubs.
It is better getting paid by the tubs, because how hard you work, that's how hard you get paid, but, I mean...
Crank out 20 tubs, that's $20, that's $400 you made.
Yeah, but, see, after that 20th hour, you know, I was making, you know, one tub every 2 hours, because I was, you know, dead tired, hands off, cut the shit, pain. So, yep. The hardest this year?
Yeah.
Why's that?
Because you run 24 hours non-stop most of the time. A lot of, you know, just a lot of preparation. Non-stop, man. Stuff like us. Now, if you're on a boat, you know, I've never fished a day on halibut, but I'm pretty sure it's pretty slack, too. But on the big boat that I went on, my crab boat, we had everything all baited up before we left. We slept for 6 hours before the opening. Got everything set, set our gear out, whatever we had to do. And then we ran our gear for 10 hours and slept 4 hours. Got up that morning, ran gear again. And like I said, we caught our quota within 16 hours. So, man, it was great. We ate lunch.
Yeah.
Took a break, and ate some lunch. Ate a good dinner and did all that good shit. So we never, you know, it was pretty efficient.
On that first opening, though, when you can catch as much as the boat can hold, you don't sleep too much, do you?
It all depends what the skipper wants to do, you know. If you gotta have him butchered before you get to town, then you don't sleep.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of time to push 100 pounds an hour.
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah. Okay. How do you do the each types of fishing?
How do you do them?
Yeah, how do you do them?
Explain a little more.
Well,
you're talking about salmon?
How do you do salmon?
Like, what do I do on salmon?
What do you do? What does everybody do? How do you catch the fish?
Well, we have a seine. You know, like right now, herring's starting up. So we got, that's a 100 pound seine. That's all you're allowed. It's 100 fathoms long. And it's 4.5 strips deep.
How long's a strip?
I don't quite remember. I want to say 12 feet for a strip, but I'm not too sure. I don't remember now. It's such a long time. But anyways, my job, I'm the skiff man. So when we see a school of herring, our pilots set us on the herring. Danny tells me when to cut loose. They cut me loose, which is the guys on deck. And I just sit there with the little hook and the bunt. And Danny does what it's called a round haul. Round haul around the school. Then we just close up and he purses up. And I just wait until the tenders show up. And then he comes alongside the seine, picks up the corks, drops his pump in the seine, starts pumping our herring off. That's about it. Same way with salmon. There's three types of ways. You can hold a hook, you can do a round haul, and tow haul, which is you just go and find a tide rip, tow haul for 25 minutes or so.
Well, how do you do cod and halibut and stuff like that?
Well, now there's a new type of fishery for cod. Cod, you know, like how you crab fish with pots, you can pot fish with cod, which is a lot easier and doesn't damage the fish as much, I guess. You get paid more, better price.
What do? You just drop the cages in the water?
That cage is pots.
Pots?
Pots. They're just like crab fishing, but instead of catching crab, you're catching cod.
And how big is each pot?
It varies, you know. Some guys use 5x, 6.5x, 7x. We fished 7x last year.
What's a 7x? 7x what?
7x, 7x, 3.5, I think is how wide it is.
7x, 7x, 3.5. And how do you fish halibut?
Halibut? Yeah. Long line. Which is, you know how to do that.
I know, but yeah. I just want it in your words so I can
put it. You just long line, you got hooks. There's a snap-on gear, which has got the reel. Then you got diaper gear, which is what you did. I never done diaper gear, that'd be new to me. And tub gear, which is all I've ever done was tub gear. I've done tub gear, was it four years, and then snap-on gear one season. I like tub gear a lot better, it's faster. And, excuse me, you got your dragging, which is, I'm not too familiar with dragging, I just know it's an easy fishery. We don't, crabbers don't like the draggers, and draggers don't like the crabbers. That's all I know.
I don't know anything about dragging either.
Raspberry Island, at that time nobody even thought about limited entry. He just went out and fished, bought a commercial fishing license. You didn't have to renew your entry permit fee every year, and things were a lot simpler back in those days. We didn't have to worry about the Marine Mammal Protection Act, like we do now. We didn't get very much for our fish then. I think I only made about, that first year, $7,000, but back then money was worth something. And it was just a real different experience from what we're doing now. And it's in a lot of ways things were a lot better back then than they are now, because you didn't have all the rules and laws and regulations that you have to put up with now. We didn't have to get the Marine Mammal Protection Exemption Certificate now, and we didn't have the threat of being shut down someday like we are now, with the possibility of the sea lion being put on the Marine Mammal Endangered Species List. And if that happens, then commercial fishing is going to be in serious trouble.
How much did it cost for your permit when you first started?
It didn't cost anything. Anybody that had fished for a certain number of years filled out some paperwork on an application, and they gave you a certain amount of points for gear ownership, participation in the fishery, and you send the paperwork in to Juneau, and they analyzed it, and if you qualified, if you got enough points, I think I got 32 out of 40 points possible. So I sent my paperwork into Juneau, and they sent me back a permit, limited entry permit certificate.
Is that like a commercial fishing permit, like a seining permit?
Yes, mine was a limited entry set net permit.
And you still use that today?
I still use that today.
And you could sell that for...
That original permit that I got in about 1973 or 74.
And you could still sell that for however much it's worth right now?
I could sell that for whatever it's worth now if I wanted to. Right now, the market conditions are down, so. But there is a pretty big demand for setnet permits.
Why did you ever start fishing?
Well, I'm a kind of a risk taker and an adventuresome, and I like being out in the wilderness, and it was just a real nice place. How I got started was a friend of mine, Mike Riesoff, his dad helped me get started. He was working for American Freezer Ships at the time. I think this company went bankrupt, like many other fish companies have, but it just seemed like the thing to do at the time. It didn't really have anything to do with my summers. I had been working for my dad, but salmon seining, but I wanted to try something different and new. I had set netted before a little bit with my brother, but I wanted to do something on my own and just see how it would be working out there and in a total new environment. And I heard some good things about Raspberry Island, you know, has a nice elk herd on it, and I just wanted to do something new and different.
How has the profits varied over the past since you started?
Well, from that first year in 1971, I made about, like I said, about $7,000. But it's up and down. Of course, we've made more than that now, but it fluctuates. 1988 was our biggest year we ever had out there. That was our best year ever. The price of pinks was 85 cents that year, and reds were up to $2.70 a pound. And in contrast to that now, we're talking about, for the 1993 season, we're talking about the possibility of 80 or 90 cents a pound for reds, and possibly 15 to 20 cents for pinks. So you can see there's a big fluctuation in market. And I think what happened in 1988, the prices were so high that there was consumer resistance the next year. Of course, we had the oil spill in 89, which put a damper on the market, because a lot of the consumers in the lower 48 were wondering if the salmon was, you know, caught during the oil spill. We don't really even have a season during the oil spill, which was in March. Fishing season doesn't start until June.
Was the oil spill cleaned up by then?
No, it wasn't. I was out there in 89. I spent the whole summer out there waiting to go fishing. They had the zero tolerance policy, which means that fishermen weren't allowed to fish because of the possibility, even the remote possibility, of getting oil.
Yes. So they paid you for not fishing?
Right. Basically, we just sat on the beach and were supposed to be there ready to fish. But we never fished that whole summer. There were a few people on the south end that did, but on the north end there, in Kuprianov Straits, that's the largest, we're real near Kuprianov Straits, and that's where they had it shut down. And most of the island was shut down that summer as well. A few people did get on cleanup, but I never did. I put in several times to Exxon, to Vico, actually, that was the company that was responsible for cleanup, but I never got hired.
Way back then when you first started and you said you made about $7,000, was that more than you made in 88 in contrast to how much the dollar was worth?
No, it wasn't.
It was more, you got more fish and had more money in comparison
88.
In 88?
Much more, even with inflation and cost of living factors.
What prospects do you think go into a good season?
Well, planning. Planning is number one. You have to have good gear, good equipment. You can't have equipment that's broken down and obsolete. For quite a few years, I had Opine wooden skiffs, which were pretty much obsolete. Now I don't have any more wooden skiffs, but efficiency is the name of the game now. Saving time, saving energy, and being very competitive.
You don't think the amount of fish that return is in a factor?
Oh, definitely it is. You have to have, you know, a good year, an average year, you can make money still, even if you have, you know, other things that are going against you.
Like low prices.
Low prices. But for this year, they're expecting 21 million pinks on the island, and roughly 3 million sockeye salmon to return.
Or do you feel you can trust fishing game?
Well, after last summer, I felt somewhat hesitant to rely totally on their predictions, but I've seen other years. In 81, they gave us a poor forecast, and we came out pretty good that year. So they're not off, they're not on every year. So I would say, I think they're going to be pretty accurate this year, because we've had 2 years in a row, 91 and 92, that didn't pan out very well. But I think this year we're going to see a lot of fish on the island. But we're going to need the volume because the prices are going to be low.
So overall, the preparation is the main.
Preparation, having a good crew, somebody you can work with, because you're out there for 3 months and you have to get along real well with the people you hire, people you work with. You see each other every day, and it's kind of camp living. Everybody works together. It's kind of like a team effort.
How does the set net thing operate? You're just you guys alone on a beach, and what do you do with the fish?
Well, you have a line going to the beach and a line running out from the beach with three anchors on it. I fish 100-150 fathom net, and every day we go along, depending upon how the strength of the run is, we fish at least three or four different times, pick the net three to four different times, sometimes even more. When sometimes we go out and we pick the net, and in a few minutes later there'll be a white wall of fish again, so we'll have to go through and do it all over again, load up the skiff, and then go call the tender or wait for the tender to come along and pick up our fish. They do that every day, sometimes twice a day.
Do you keep them in a holding tank while they're...
We keep them in a holding skiff. We have burlap that we cover them up with, and sometimes we have ice for them as well. Last fall, when I was fishing late, we had ice put on the fish. And I think that the day and age is coming now where we're so concerned about quality that'll be a requirement even for the set netters, because a lot of the same boats now have champagne ice systems, refrigerators, seawater.
Herring would be able to get through that. That orange. Just barely, though.
If we had herring that small, we couldn't keep them.
Yeah. Well, what's the legal size for herring?
It all depends what the canneries want.
So I was doing bait, I had them all. They were all at least, four or 5 inches long.
I don't care about the cannery ones, like the herring and togiak. Shit, it was we were 475 grand herring.
Yeah.
Big herring. And then the stuff on the island here were only 110 grams. That's what the cannery is gonna take. The canneries would take 10 grams, 110 or bigger. Anything smaller than that, they wouldn't take them.
What about crab? What's the legal size? 10 years?
Oh, the legal size that you're allowed to put down official?
Yeah.
It varies. Okay, king crab is 6.5 inches. King crab is 5.5. Bear dye is 6.5. Apulio is fish and game, like 3.2. But the processors and canneries wouldn't take anything less than 4.
Okay. I'm gonna start walking up there. I gotta get